Network Europe, a program from Radio E, a partnership of Europe's international broadcasters.
Welcome to Network Europe, a collaboration of the continent's leading international broadcasters. I'm Ben Fazul, and coming to you this week from Berlin's Olympic Stadium, one of the venues of the upcoming World Cup. And joining me is sports commentator and Deutsche Welle presenter Des Squire.
Hello, Ben. Well, as you can see here at the Olympic Stadium, it's a grand view, I'm sure you'll agree, and even the grass is looking good. It's one of those things about FIFA that everything is planned in minute detail, and the grass, amazingly enough, is like that. There's a 24-page booklet just on the grass of the pitch. Did you know it's got to be 28 millimetres long? No longer than. Only FIFA would come up with something like that, but that's one of the things that makes the World Cup what it is, such a spectacle.
And in the background here, they're putting the finishing touches on. I'm sure FIFA's got other worries on their mind, though, including your mates from England.
Well, hooliganism is going to be a problem, and it is one that FIFA has successively tried to stamp out in the international game for many years. The English will be banning some 3,500 hooligans from leaving the country during the World Cup. Other countries, it must be said, are addressing this terrible problem as well, including Germany, Holland, Poland, stopping known thugs coming to the game and ruining what is a brilliant spectacle for everybody else. At the end of the day, this is about sport and not about people punching each other in the face. Nobody wants to see that, and I'm sure, hopefully, security will be something that will be A1. During the tournament.
For more on that subject, we go to Deutsche Welle's Don McGilvray with his report on British efforts to keep the peace here in Germany.
The number of football banning orders changes on a daily basis because some people's banning orders expire every day. They have a life of between 2 years and 10 years.
Ryan Drew, director of the United Kingdom Football Policing Unit, swings around his swivel chair and scans a cluttered office wall littered with football posters, team scarves and banners. After a few seconds, he finds what he's looking for. A large signboard with a number on it.
So the figure fluctuates on a sort of daily basis. And as of today, we have 3,381 people subject to football banning orders. They're all going to have to surrender their passport to their local police. If they don't, they commit a criminal offence and the police will be looking for them.
The English police have already spent countless hours dealing with these 3,381 people. They've all been convicted or charged with football-related violent crimes. Drew has 92 full-time officers keeping a tab on these ruffians during the domestic season. Now his team will be heading to the continent to lend a hand to the German police. Along with these specialist officers, a contingent of British bobbies will be walking the beat in Frankfurt, Nuremberg and Cologne.
We'll have uniform English bobbies in the venues where England are playing. They won't have any police powers. They'll just be there as a reassuring sight and trying to act as an interface between English supporters and the German police. So being able to deal with any issues or concerns that English supporters have, relay that message to the German police and hopefully be able to explain why something may be happening and why some measure has been introduced. The smiling, friendly English bobbies to be there, to be highly visible, to be accessible, to be someone that our supporters feel comfortable going and talking to.
Fiona McGee is one of these supporters. With her, she brings typical English passion, commitment, determination. She has everything but tickets. She hopes to pick up something as the tournament unfolds. Either way, she's sure she'll have a terrific time. It's a pity she and her friends will be tarred by the English hooligan brush.
It's only ever really been a tiny minority of fans who have been more interested in causing trouble than actually watching the football. And that is a major embarrassment to the vast majority of the rest of us who really are genuine football fans, want to learn about other cultures and hopefully see our teams win at the same time. So actually you will see more and more England fans not prepared to put up with the tiny, tiny minority of people who were there for something else other than the football.
England's football hooligan shame peaked in 1985. When 39 Italian fans died just before the European Cup final. Liverpool supporters charged into the Juventus section of the Heysel Stadium in Brussels. A wall collapsed, causing the deaths and more than 400 serious injuries. After that, Margaret Thatcher's government introduced the banning orders. Britain is the only country in the world that has a program confiscating hooligans' passports. Drew says it takes all kinds to create a Yob army.
People who involve themselves in criminal activity at football, because that's what it is, violence and disorder, criminal activity, they cross the whole sort of social strata, from unemployed to highly professional people, from people in their late teens and early 20s to people in their 40s and maybe 50s sometimes. It's very difficult sometimes to find a rational explanation with it, other than the fact that it's been part of our culture ever since football existed.
and is part of the English culture that has to change, says Edmund Hall, a lawyer with the British Crown Prosecution Service. He says the hooligans banned from international games tend to accept their punishment.
We generally get a fairly high compliance rate. People do generally realise pretty much when they're subject to these orders, the game is up. And if the alternative is surrendering your passport or having your door kicked in at 6 a.m. by police, then people tend to realise that the game's up and they've just got to behave.
And they were certainly well behaved at the last World Cup. The tournament was played far away from Europe, in Japan and Korea. The cost and inconvenience kept English lagerlouts at home. This year, however, the games are awfully close. Police and Crown prosecutors think keeping more than 3,000 serious troublemakers away from Germany will tone down hooliganism. But as Hall says, they expect some English misconduct.
Well, of course, you can never predict 100% who is going to cause trouble for the first time. And there will be situations in Germany when what might start out as an innocent evening's drinking gets out of hand.
And when it gets out of hand, Hall will be right there to write up a court order seizing the offender's passport. Hall will travel from city to city with the English team. Any fans arrested by the German police will receive his attention.
Either the person will be deported by the German authorities or will come home under his own steam. And the moment his feet touch the ground in England again, he will be met by a police officer who will serve a summons on him to go to court. When he goes to court, there will be a set of papers that I and my colleagues have prepared, which will be the application for the football banning order. So he'll be dealt with virtually immediately upon his return to Britain.
Despite recent quiet years on the international front, the English are still considered the top of the hooligan tree by the public and police from the countries they visit. And perhaps even more alarming, envious thugs from other nations see a rumble with the English as a sure sign to gain some status. Here's Brian Drew again.
There are countries to the east of Germany where I think they have a domestic problem, and I think colleagues in the German law enforcement community as well have some concerns about maybe the lack of control that's exercised on them at the moment in those countries where they seem to be able to get away with anything, and if they think they can come to Germany and behave in the same way. One of the things that we have a concern about is that our supporters may become the victim rather than act as the aggressor in this championship. There may be groups of supporters from other countries who think that because we had a reputation in the past that English supporters will be up for a challenge, and they may set out deliberately to provoke some form of reaction from English supporters.
So the English supporters, fun-loving soccer fans, will have to fight off hooligans from other countries during the tournament in Germany, while in England more than 3,000 yobs are set to hit the streets causing chaos. English police are preparing for trouble all across the country. Some cities will force pubs to close following all England games. Don McGilvery, Deutsche Welle Radio, London.
Now getting down to the game, Des, several of the most fancy teams failed to impress at the last World Cup. Argentina, France, Portugal as well, they were all knocked out as early as the group stage. What happened there?
Well, that was something that's due to the fact that the domestic schedules for teams and clubs has become so full. For example, Chelsea last season, they played 65 games in a season, and it just that stars are just tired when it comes round to the summer to an international tournament. That's why this time around, FIFA decided to have a late date that no games could be played after such and such a date in order for the top stars to be fit and ready to give it 100% for the world game at the tournament.
Radio Prague's Ian Willoughby spoke to Czech Republic and Chelsea goalkeeper Petr Cech about this very subject.
Yeah, it can happen again, but I think that almost everyone's got now experiences with the last World Cup when almost every favorite team, they had a problem with that. So maybe this experience can help them to deal with that this season. But in the end, every player is individual, and everyone copes with that differently. So, you know, this is up to team coaches to really prepare everyone for the World Cup.
What does it mean to the Czech Republic that the World Cup is taking place in neighboring Germany?
I think that's great for Czech football because everyone can come, everyone can see the game. Of course, not everyone who's got a ticket can come, to be precise. And it's not far away to go. So when you've got a problem with the flying tickets, You don't need any in Czech Republic to come to Germany. You take your car and go. You go by car. So that's easier to travel for Czech fans. And we hope that we will have all tickets sold and all places available for Czech fans.
Is it an advantage for all European countries that the World Cup is taking place in Europe?
I think it is. because there is no time differences, there is no different weather, there is no different humidity, there is no different air, there is no, we know the weather and everything in Europe, so this is maybe the advantage for us. But even for fans, I think it's better they don't have to travel 1,000 miles to be present for the World Cup, and they need to wake up 3 a.m. to see the team on the telly. So this is advantage for the people in Europe.
At the European Championships in Portugal, many people said the Czechs played the most attractive football. Do you think now more could be expected of the Czech Republic at the World Cup?
I think everyone expects more than 4 years ago, because we've been playing regularly very well during all qualifications, all friendly games, and we've got some good players in the squad, famous in abroad. So this, I think that we are now regarded differently than we were a few years ago.
Realistically speaking, what would be a success for the Czech Republic? What, if I said to you now, would you take a place in the semi-finals?
It would be a great success. I think for us the target is to be in the last 16, and after we will see.
Well, whether or not the weather's going to play along with this tournament is a good question. We're forced here to stand out in the drizzle. But one person who's certainly going to be playing in this tournament is Thierry Henry from France. One of the reasons that he's Europe's best striker would have to be that he plays for Arsenal. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, am I biased? I happen to be a very big Arsenal fan and a season ticket holder. I love them. Of course, the French team is star-studded. I mean, has it got the shine of the 1998 World Cup winning squad? Remains to be seen. But apart from Henry, there's David Trezeguet, Patrick Vieira from Juventus. You have Galas at Chelsea. And, of course, Zizou. The last games he will be playing before retiring, and football will be a lonelier place without this absolutely fantastic, stellar midfield general. France, if they raise their game, are favourites for the title. They can do it on the day.
Des, you were running through all those French names earlier. Tell me, as a commentator, how do you manage to memorise all those players?
Well, good question. Hard to answer. I think, as any fan who's in a stadium will tell you, it's a completely different experience watching the game in the stadium as it is to watch it on the television. If you're a commentator, you're normally at a very good vantage point in the stadium, and you can look down and you see the numbers on the back, you get the team sheet, so you roughly start to learn the numbers. And as you're above, you learn to see what the managers mean or the trainers mean by tactical formations. And then you more or less realise who that guy is, who that one is. And as soon as you've memorised it, that gives you time to focus on other facts that you need to put across to the viewer or the listener, if it's a radio case, that you want to somehow put this across how this player is. Like, for example, if you know number 10 is Henry, and you've memorised that, you can then say, oh, he plays for Arsenal, he scores so many goals, and he's in a brilliant club. I mean, it just gives you time to focus on anything else. It's a very hard thing to do, not as easy as it looks.
And at the same time, you've got the rest of the world looking down on you. I mean, don't you get nervous?
I try not to. Thanks for reminding me.
Now, this event's going to be big bickies for business, of course. What about the oldest trade of them all, prostitution? The sex workers have been set up in their very own little village of huts here, I've heard, and it's legal here in Germany. A lot of the ladies are going to be coming from Poland, though, and hot on their heels are going to be not just the football fans, but also a group of nuns. More from Radio Polonia's Gabriel Stiller.
The World Cup will see a large influx of fans from all over Europe, mostly young men. In Germany, prostitution is legal, but at the same time many women are trafficked there and forced to prostitution. The rising demand is widely held to be bigger than the supply, and so many more women are believed to be trafficked to Germany for prostitution. This has prompted reactions all over Europe. In the UK, the police and youth television network MTV are urging fans not to use prostitutes. In Sweden, the National Ombudsman of Gender Equality has received a lot of media attention in a call to entirely boycott the World Cup. Poland is a country that experiences both recruiting and transit of and demand for trafficked women. Several organizations are working to raise awareness of these problems and help victims of trafficking. Caritas Poland, the country's main charity linked to the Roman Catholic Church, is working with several religious orders and other organizations to target potential buyers with a message not to buy women. Piotr is one of those involved in the Caritas Poland campaign.
We think the biggest problem in this project is that the young women who are faced to this problem, who are faced of sex human trafficking, don't know that what is their real target of these people who offer them some work in Germany or some activity or some seasonal work, for example, that they actually don't, this woman don't know what is the real target of these people. We think that it is the biggest problem in this campaign. We think also that another problem is that our intelligence, our policy don't really know the structure of this organization who will handle this human trafficking.
Following the international campaigns, there have been different figures circulating in media, the most common suggesting that about 40,000 young women would be brought to Germany for use in forced prostitution during the World Cup. But Stana Buchowska of the Polish La Strada Foundation Against Trafficking in Women warns against the use of such estimates and points to the complexity of the situation.
I do not want to underestimate the problem, but sometimes these events like world championships are misused or overused by also by some organization. I mean, the good thing is that this, the problem is on the agenda and it is visible. But making these estimations, which are totally out of the blue, I don't know how they get this 70,000 or even I have heard in Germany 400,000 women trafficked. It means that if you present it to the public opinion, they said, oh, it is made up and I cannot take it seriously. Also, it is part of the ideological discussion because many organizations, mainly religious organizations, they see that all women who will work in the prostitution are trafficked. The life is not such as simple, you know.
The La Strada Foundation is actively working to help women who have been trafficked. Their hotline number can also be used for any tips about trafficking, a crime that is hard to discover as many of the women cross the borders legally. La Strada views trafficking as a complex social problem closely related to migration and gender relations.
We are pleased that trafficking is an issue for women organizations and more also for EU politicians and the general public is targeted. But we do support these campaigns to raise awareness about trafficking, focus on potential clients to make them aware of the fact that the women of their choice might not have chosen the job, but instead has been forced to work in prostitution. At the other hand, we do not support the call for the criminalization of clients, of sex workers, as it is made by other organizations, because it, according to our information and according to our experience, causes a lot of underground and illegal activities.
Regardless of outlook, the many initiatives to combat trafficking during the World Cup have put the problem on the agenda once more. I'm Gabriel Stiller.
Coming to our last story, another issue for fans is going to be getting to the games. I mean, the tickets aren't the easiest to get a hold of and they're not that cheap, are they?
I think the word we're looking for is gold dust. And on top of that, it's a travelling expense. You've got to find a hotel, there's beer prices, food prices, and luckily Germany's a beer-drinking country, so at least that thing isn't such a burden on your pocket.
And on the Swedes, of course, where alcohol does cost a lot. And the Swedes have come up with a very clever idea. Hordes of football fans there are planning on caravanning around Germany during the World Cup. Certainly a good way to get to the various games, which are being held in a dozen different cities, as Radio Sweden's Dave Russell discovered.
A reggae tribute to Sweden's top striker, Zlatan, by the band Elias, featuring vocals from a seven-year-old boy called Franz, who's becoming quite a celebrity in this Nordic nation, whose demand is fast becoming the soundtrack of the summer as Swedes go football crazy. Tables in pubs showing Sweden's group games have been booked up since February, while flat-screen TV sales for the stay-at-home Swede have gone through the roof. Thousands, though, will be experiencing the Festival of Football at first hand by travelling to Germany, and many have decided to go by caravan or campervan, forgoing the expensive option of staying in a hotel or bed and breakfast. Petter Isaksson and Fredrik Montgomery, both 34, are going to Germany in a caravan, along with two friends.
As soon as we were qualified for this fantastic tournament, we set up a little bit of a route to follow. And we are four people, four friends that has done some football trips in the past, and this is going to be a memory for our life, of course. And we're going to be at a number of different campings, and you never know how it's going to end, but we look forward to it.
Four guys in a caravan, it sounds like it's going to be a laugh, but also it may be a bit cramped.
Well, this caravan we don't know too much about, but we hope it exists, and it should be with us for this 3 weeks in Germany.
I think it's a challenge to live four guys in a small area. Well, I think we'll make it. We're quite familiar with each other. For example, I know that Petter snores quite heavily, so yeah. I'm used to it. We're planning to do the full football experience, so we will probably have football DVDs and football-related music, and of course all the games will be live broadcasters. We will have TV and everything, so we will live football during 2 weeks, I guess.
Peter and Fredrik are both members of Camp Sweden, an unofficial Swedish supporters club boasting 3,000 football fanatical supporters set up after the European Championships in Portugal 2 years ago. They'll all be camping in Germany and following a set plan.
First we go to Dortmund because Sweden are playing against Trinidad there. And after that we go to Berlin, which is the place we're planning to stay the longest time because Berlin is quite an amazing city to be in. There's Paraguay there. And then we'll, between the Paraguay and England game, we will see actually Munich. And hopefully get a ticket to the Brazil-Australia game. And then, of course, going to Cologne to beat the Brits. That's the final goal.
The German hosts can expect a different kind of Swedish football fan this time round, according to Mattias Jürgensen, editor-in-chief of the Swedish football magazine Offside.
In Portugal was the first time that Sweden had a big football-based fan following. The Swedish national team has had a quite special fan following, which has been the national team audience, which has been a different audience than the audience watching league football in Sweden. The national team audience has more been people from the outside of the football cities. But in Portugal, it was normal football fans. It was 25, 30-year-old Bayern supporters or AIK supporters or Malmö supporters. So for the first time there was this big the singing, the sort of audience that England used to have.
Tickets have been hard to come by, but Petter and Fredrik say that won't stop a record number of Swedish fans travelling to Germany.
I think that we might be able to be set up a new record for us. I mean, 16,000 was allocated to the federation, but a lot of people has bought it directly from Germany. So 16,000 from Råsunda, from Solna, from where we got the headquarter, and I would say at least 5 or 10 more thousand. So probably a record for Swedish football fans.
So Des, what's going through your mind standing here in this stadium with the World Cup football's biggest event only days away?
Well, I hope it doesn't rain, because the rain is rather annoying today, but on a serious note, work and play. During the World Cup tournament itself, I'll be very, very busy. I'm working for newspapers, obviously working for DWTV, on location or in the studio. It's a massive amount of work. Play, well, I'm a football fan. I have it in my blood. I love it. And I just hope it's going to be a cracking tournament. Plenty of goals, a few surprises, and of course, England winning.
Well, we don't want to see any bias coming through in your reporting. That wraps up Network Europe for another week. I'm Ben Fazulin.
And my name's Des Squire.
Thanks for joining us from Berlin's Olympic Stadium. See you at the World Cup. This program's produced with support of the European Commission.